Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to MikeReinold.com/knee for more information and to sign up today.
On this episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show, we talk about some of our current thoughts on blood flow restriction training and how we're using it here at Champion.
The Ask Mike Reinold Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show. We're up in Boston, Massachusetts, as a Champion PT and Performance. Mike Scanuto, Dan Pope, Dave Tilley, Lenny Macrina, answering all your great questions. Head to MikeReinold.com and click on that podcast link, and there's a big form you can fill out. You can ask us anything you want, PT, fitness, sports performance, anything you guys want to talk about. Leonard.
Sorry, I was snoozing.
CCCI, you need a nickname as the CCCI. So Len's the Kai.
Student Curriculum.
Kai. Len, who are our fabulous students?
Our fabulous students, we have Shelly Anderson from Augusta University. Augusta, Georgia University of Physical Therapy in Augusta, Georgia. We also have Cameron McDonald from University of Rhode Island.
Does not have a farm.
Fun fact about Cam. He thinks the best place to vacation on the Cape is Plymouth, Massachusetts, which is nowhere close to Cape Cod. So look at the map.
Do you know anything about New England?
Self-proclaimed greater Cape Cod area.
Nice. Yes, it is within the United States. Yes. You're close. I like this place called Miami.
It is a very
convenient place to go to. So awesome. Who's going to start today? We got Killa Cam.
We have Kevin from Virginia. How often do you use blood flow restricted training? Is it more useful in a performance setting or rehab setting or both?
What was this person's name?
I'm sorry. Kevin.
Kevin. So Virginia. Kevin asked about blood flow restriction training.
Burfer?
And BFR.
Burfer?
Burfer. And I thought this would be a good opportunity for us to kind of talk about like our current thoughts on BFR and where we are right now, because it's evolving, right? We're learning more, right? We're starting to get more reps and experience using it, so I think that's been helpful too. And I think we're starting to understand a little bit better, and I think we kind of get where that is. So let's use this episode and let's kind of talk about what are our current thoughts on the state of BFR. So let's start with his first question, maybe, and says, is this just a rehab tool? Is this a fitness tool, or is this both? Dan, you want to take this one? You want to start? So
yeah.
BFR, first off, I will answer, we all use it here at Champion. We've all been using it for some time now. I think, in a general, we've enjoyed it, right? And I think we're seeing some benefits, so we do all use it. So Dan, I mean, is this just a rehab thing, or is there a place to use this in healthy people or people looking for performance?
Yeah, I'd say both, easy answer. One thing I will say, just kind of piggyback off what you said, is that we get a lot of kind of toys here and we try a lot of things here, which is great. And blood flow, for me, is something that's really stood the test of time. And it stood the test of time from a couple places. So from a rehab perspective, I've been using it for, about a year and a half or so. And I've used it regularly in my own training, at least like once a week, for probably the past year and a half as well.
I think the results speak for themselves, right?
See this. Yeah.
See this? Oh, I didn't miss.
Yeah,
notice
yeah.
how he didn't let it fall down. Yeah. He's just keeping it up. Keep going.
I think it's useful for both, but I will say that the rehab is probably the stronger place,
Okay.
So the thing is, it's helpful for a lot of athletes when they have a painful joint, when they want to load the muscle some, or after surgery when you don't want to lose muscle, right? I think that's a really big one that blood flow suits for. From a performance perspective, I think it's helpful for building muscle mass. So if you're looking to build more muscle mass, it's helpful, but a lot of sports are not necessarily looking for a lot of muscle mass, right?
Right.
I think the big thing is that let's say you're into fitness and you have some aches and pains somewhere, right? So if you train for long enough, you're gonna find certain joints just don't really handle the stress as well as others. blood flow restriction is tremendous for that, right? So if you have achy elbows, let's say, and you still want to be able to train your arms, you can do blood flow restriction for your biceps, for your triceps. I have a history of having pain in my hips. I can't really squat as much. If I could squat more frequently, would that make me stronger? Probably, but I can still get some good lower body volume training by doing blood flow restriction, right? Okay. Same thing would go for any other body part. I really think that it's got a lot of application for a lot of joints, not just the ones that have been studied. So.
Yeah,
I like it. I think it's got a lot of application. It fits its way well into a lot of programs for a variety of reasons.
All right, let's stick on the fitness aspect before we get to rehab, because I think the rehab implications are larger, right? There's some pretty exciting things about how this could be useful in the rehab world. But in the fitness world then, what do you think, Dan? Is it mostly for strength? Is it mostly for hypertrophy? Is it aesthetic? How does somebody use this to get more out of themselves? And anyone jump in if they have some thoughts on this here.
Yeah, I really think it depends on your goals, right? There's been one study with blood flow restriction training for powerlifters, which was kind of interesting. I think it was like 12 weeks where they had them do blood flow restriction training, something like that. I'm probably getting the time frame wrong. But they had the group that was doing blood flow only did blood flow for 2 of those weeks, right? So it was like both groups train the same for the first week. Second week, one group does a normal powerlifting training, the other group does all blood flow restriction training. It was like front squats. They were just looking at the squat, I think. So front squats. And then the third week, regular training again for both. Fourth was one did blood flow, the other did regular training. And what they found is that at the end of that training experiment, the one group that did blood flow restriction training had larger increases in muscle mass, where the powerlifting group that did just powerlifting had no change. They tested their strength again, and their strength was the same, right? Mm-hmm. What was interesting about that is the muscle growth was in type 1 fibers preferentially, right?
Interesting.
Which you can argue, like, that's not a great thing, and their strength didn't increase, right? But if you look at it from the perspective of, oh, wow, we actually built some more muscle mass, maybe over the course of time that will lead to more strength. We don't know that yet. They didn't study it.
I was thinking that, yeah.
The other thing is that you could actually not hit super heavy weights for 2 weeks out of like a 3-month block and still have the same amount of strength.
Right.
So that has enormous implications for people that can't really tolerate as much heavy loading.
Right.
We can take away that heavy load for 2 weeks, still have the same strength gain.
Right.
So I think if you look at that study and say, well, there's no difference in strength from that perspective for a powerlifter, I think it's not really giving credence towards.
A lot of people got that out of that study too, and a lot of people said that where, oh, well, it's not any better than just powerlifting. And there's a lot of people, again, this is like the Instagram debates right now, that'll say, well, it doesn't show that it's any better. You don't get stronger. But what they're completely missing is this person deloaded, so to say, and probably took a lot of stress off their body. That's going to probably be very impactful for them, right? And they got to do this and still maintain strength. Right? So everybody wants to see, is there a difference down the road? Is there a difference at the end? Well, maybe that's not the only thing we need to measure. We talk about what happened to these people's lives and how they felt. So great analogy for stuff like that. Rehab-wise, now we're using it a bunch in rehab, and you know, to make it completely simple as to why we're doing it, you know, what we're trying to do essentially with the body is when somebody can't load maximally, which is almost every injury, right? Like every injury, every post-op, everybody in any procedure. If you can't load maximally, it's gonna be really hard to get strength gains, right? So blood flow restriction allows us to load at a smaller percentage of their max intensity and still get some similar kind of tricks to the body to like, it's to still increase their strength, right? So what's happening is we're allowing the body to still get some strength adaptations with less of a max intensity effort. So Dave, quickly, why is that? What do you think? I know you know the answer.
Yeah, so this is gonna be my point anyways, is that our initial concerns with blood flow restriction training is that there's two main pathways of hypertrophy. There's a metabolic and a more of a mechanical stimulus. They have different, you know, genetic pathways that turn over tissue, so you want to make sure that you're not only training the metabolic one, because sports involve high mechanical loads. So our initial fear was going with blood flow restriction training and maybe not just getting a good strength program, and so you'd set somebody up more for maybe cartilage issues or tendon issues because you haven't strengthened the interfaces of those new muscles that are stronger.
Love.
And so that was our initial concern. I think now, again, pendulum swings, it goes super far one way. People say, yeah, yep, it's a good tool, but you still have to strength train. And from our experiences, I have two athletes who had ACL reconstructions, and they went back to their doctor after 6 months, and they had done BFR initially for post-op and maybe a month into their training, but then transitioned to a full strength program. And the doctors who did their isokinetic testing were like, well, these are great numbers. We've never seen such high numbers. And obviously that's so many factors like the athlete's dedication and the,
sure,
you know, they follow the program. But I think when you take it in concert of like, okay, metabolic training effects and mechanical stimulation, both are important. Can you blend those into a program? And like Dan said, maybe have it as a one time per week thing when you get farther down the road. That's a really good way to maybe kind of marry those two things together and not get so caught up in, you know, only using it for everything or saying like, no, it doesn't help.
Right.
You know, I think it's probably more together than apart.
And I don't think we're like a champion. I don't think we're necessarily using it as a tool in isolation, right? Yeah. It's like a helpful tool in this part. It all comes down to the occlusion, right? So the occlusion of the limb, right, through these cuffs, right? And occlusion's a bad word because it's not full occlusion, yeah. Right? We have a percentage of occlusion, right? These different cuffs and even your ability to do that is you can change the occlusion rate. Right, so the majority of research is being done at one occlusion rate, which is 80%, right? And it's being done that way because you have to standardize it. But realize that you can use whatever occlusion rate you want. When Dan just exercised, he was just working out before we started filming this podcast, he did a full workout with occlusion. It was 0% occlusion, right? But he had 0% occlusion, right? And then somebody on the other end, you could put like a complete tourniquet on, right? Or do something like that, and you can have 100% occlusion. And realistically, somewhere in that spectrum, right, you're going to get different amounts of occlusion, and you're going to get different responses, right? So there isn't like one set way to use it, right? If you have too little occlusion and you go do an exercise, you won't have as much of a benefit because you're not going to feel the fatigue. Your body's not going to have that same metabolic response.
Right. And exactly, right? So you're losing much less loads.
Right.
So it's not a mechanical stimulus and there's no occlusion, so there's no acidity buildup. It's not a metabolic workout.
It's not enough. So you have to use more reps. Now, yep. Dan, with 0% occlusion, had to use more weights.
Yeah.
He could have used more weights or he could have used more reps. And he would have gotten to that point, but it might have taken him a lot more reps or a lot more weight to get to that same point. So that's kind of what we're trying to find here, Chambers. We're trying to find like where that occlusion rate is, because we've had people like initially post-op with ACLs, we put it on and we do something, I don't want to say they feel nothing, but you can tell they're not challenged enough afterwards. So with that person, we either need to kind of enhance a little bit of the occlusion, or they need to do more, right? They need to do more reps, or they need to do something. So there is a diminishing return though, right? You may have an injury, say it's like a tendinopathy, you might not want to do 30, 15, 15, 15, like some of the protocols say in the research, or 30, 30, 30, which some of the protocols say in the research. That's 75 to 90 reps. It's a lot of reps, right? Like we may not want to do that in a certain person. Right? So, you know, I think what we're seeing out there is we're starting to learn the research and we're trying to figure out exactly how to apply it and not get stuck in one kind of methodology.
I really do feel, and this is one of the things I've moved away with personally with my own training and also with my patients, is that I like the idea of the 30-30-30 and 30-15-15-15, but my thoughts are just, you know, what we're probably doing is we're taking someone close to failure. I mean, if you go in the gym and you put, let's say like your deadlift max is 500 pounds and you do 225, you just do sets of five every time, that doesn't make any sense. You're not challenging your system in any way. So that 30-15-15, maybe that fits if you pick the exact right weight. The other thing is I think that we're probably just pushing someone close to failure. Right. And if you use more occlusion, you hit failure faster.
Right.
Right. If you use less occlusion, you're going to hit it, you know, with more repetitions later.
Or more weight. You got to use more weight.
Yeah. So just like you said, we can dose it appropriately as long as that person is challenging themselves enough.
Right.
You know?
I think that's the future of BFRs. Us figuring that out is we're manipulating kind of three variables, right? The reps, the load, and the amount of occlusion. And I think putting those three together somewhere is where we're gonna try to figure this out and where that's gonna go. And that may have an impact on rehab versus fitness too, on kind of where they do it. But man, I don't know, anecdotally, Len, you've been using it a bunch. I mean, anecdotally, what are your thoughts? What you're seeing some good improvements,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I do see good improvements. I think I hear it from my clients too, that they like it. They like to feel that burn. They come in afterwards and they feel sore, like the next day or 2 days later, they like that feeling. So, you know, I think we know the physiological effects to it, and at least we're figuring it out and learning more, but I've added it, I like it, I use it for most of my post-ops, especially lower extremity ones. I don't use it a lot for upper extremity, just, you know, full disclosure, I just don't. I see a lot of baseball players, so I just don't. But definitely lower body, definitely had positive results with some of the systems that we have.
Yeah. So anybody, I think that was, I think that's good. I think we answered the question. I mean, that's kind of like our current thoughts on BFR.
Yeah.
We've had at least one other episode in the past where we've talked a little bit more about BFR that you should probably go back and watch or listen to, just kind of hear more about that. But I think that's kind of like our current thoughts on where we're going. Mm-hmm. I know as a plan with us, I mean, we plan on using it more and more, right? I mean, it's kind of hard for me to find a reason not to use it in a post-operative person. Right, and we're seeing so many people ACLs or whatever that just have lingering strength deficits down the road. Right, maybe this is something that we can do a little bit better. We can do better. So, any other closing thoughts, anyone? Pretty good. Nice. All right. So very good. Good question on BFR. That's kind of like our current thought process. And look, we're still learning too, and we're going to be the first to tell you that. So we're going to keep like updating this and changing, what we think as we learn more, because I think there's still a lot more to be learned.
Learned.
Is learned a word in the South?
Turned up.
In Europe.
Learned. I feel like this is Googleable. We can find this. You're agreeing. But anyway, awesome. Great episode. Thanks so much. Head to MikeReynolds.com. Click on that podcast link and fill out the form. You can ask us some great questions. And be sure to head to iTunes, Spotify, and rate, review, and subscribe to this. And we'll see you in a future episode. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeReynolds.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at MikeReynolds.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.